Hello and welcome. I am Kevin Clark for a special episode, not the episode we had planned today, certainly not the episode we wanted to do. A couple of housekeeping notes. We got the memo halfway through this episode that Bills Bengals will not be played this week.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
In the wake of the Damar Hamlin injury, that obviously is a no-brainer, something that we discussed in the beginning of the episode. And we also got the update that Damar Hamlin remains in a critical condition after spending last night in the ICU. We got that midway through as well. So that was the two most recent bits of news that came through during the episode. Here it is. Brian Curtis joins me. Lindsay Jones joins me. Lindsay, hello. How are you?
I'm good, Kevin. I mean, all things considered, pretty bad day in the NFL, but we're all kind of processing it here in real time.
So, Brian, this was the scariest thing I've ever seen on a football field. And we've seen, it was funny because there were some people saying, well, we never seen ambulances on the field. Yeah, we have, like a handful of times. We've seen stop the game, everybody gather around kind of events in the 2.5 decades I've been watching football. But this immediately seemed different. The thing that in my head, and no one's really probably going to remember this, it's a, kind of an obscure soccer game from a decade ago, but I was watching it. A guy named Fabrice Muamba collapsed in a Bolton-Tottenham Hotspur game. And the only way you knew it was different was because they showed the faces of the players who processed it differently. And I wrote this morning, but you it felt different. It looked different because it was different. You knew that immediately. And you had the tone of Joe Buck, who could see what was going on. He later said on SVP that you could see Hamlin getting his chest pounded on, frankly, which the TV wasn't showing. The players were tightly packed around it for good reason. Obviously, you're not looking for close-ups there. How did you process this last night, Brian?
I'll tell you the thing that stuck out to me as different. Lisa Salters mentioned this last night, was we have this ritual when we all watch football, which is a player sometimes is injured. Sometimes it's a really awful injury where they're going out on a cart or even going out with a backboard, and they give this thumbs up to the crowd. Mm-hmm. And it almost, for all of us people that love football, and again, I am very much in this camp, it becomes this way of giving ourselves permission to forget about the violence of football and go back to the game and think in this way that is obviously crazy that everything's going to be just fine. Everything's going to be okay. And the fact that that did not happen last night, as she mentioned, was this real sense, if we needed one, and I don't think we did, which was that, you know, the game is not going to continue tonight and everything may not be okay. And that was really striking to me.
I agree. And this is something that I think it's become almost ghoulish that, like, there's always about 15 minutes after any serious injury, there's the report that, oh, he's got movement in his extremities. And then it's like, oh, okay, good. That's great news. Great, great. And the color guy says that you love that. You love that for the young man. Like that whole thing, that process. And it's like, that's not good news. That's like a grim saying that shouldn't be celebrated, that leaves more things unsaid than actually said. And again, we didn't even get that. And so it was just absolutely horrifying to see that all happen. Lindsay, you were on a conference call last night with the league office, one of a handful of reporters on there, talking about the process and all of that stuff. What did the league do? What did the league say? And what's there left to address from a process standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still a lot of reporting that needs to be done and is going to come out about kind of the TikTok about what happened. I think there's a couple things to consider. One, the emergency action plan was engaged immediately and seems to have been followed basically to perfection, right? I mean, the stadium, both sidelines, there are obviously athletic trainers from both teams, but there are doctors there, and there are doctors who are specifically trained in airway management and cardiologists. There was an AED on the sideline. You know, the NFL always likes to say that it's the safest, you know, that there are so many medical professionals available and first responders there that the time between when Damar Hamlin collapsed and when compressions began and oxygen was starting to be delivered was basically as fast as possible outside of like if you had collapsed actually inside of a hospital because there were so many first responders on site. So I think that is one takeaway that we still don't know that much about Damar Hamlin's condition. We're recording this Tuesday, middle of the afternoon. There have been very few actual updates coming out of the University of Cincinnati Medical Center, the Bills, Damar Hamlin's family, those sorts of things. We do know that his heart stopped on the field, and they were able to get a pulse back on the field before he was loaded into that ambulance, which is really incredible to the medical technology, a credit to those first responders who were there. All of that was explained on this conference call last night with a bunch of NFL executives, including Donna Ponte, who was on site there in Cincinnati, and Troy Vincent, who is the VP of football operations. The big question that we still have, and I think that all of us really need to know about just like process-wise, is the way that we all kind of understood what was happening was that Joe Buck on ESPN was telling us this game is going to restart in 5 minutes. And that was clearly coming from somewhere. You know, I think he repeated it about 10 times, and there, you know, he was trying to in real time.
Joe Burrow was warming up.
Yeah. So that cues. Was at some point that was relayed, whether it was from a low-level NFL staffer, whether it was from somebody very, very high up, but that was relayed to some people on the field, and it was relayed to us, the viewing public, millions of us watching at home, and that impacted the way that we viewed the entire scenario because we were all saying, how? Look at their faces. Look at what's happening. Look at Sean McDermott. Look at Josh Allen. Look at Dane Jackson, who is, you know, his a childhood friend of Damar Hamlin. Like, look at these, you can't make them play a game right now. And what the exec said later was that there was never a consideration of that. What they were doing when they were talking on the field was saying, let's get in the locker room. How long do you need? Get in the locker room, process this, talk to your players. And that they were never, and Troy Vincent was very, I mean, you probably both have spoken to Troy Vincent before. I mean, he's blunt. He says what he feels. He doesn't hold back things. And he said, that's completely insensitive. I don't know where that came from. I mean, it came from somewhere at the league. So we need to know.
Yeah, Joe Buck didn't make it up.
Yeah, Joe Buck wasn't making that up. Yeah, exactly. So that came from somewhere. And it really shifted the way that all of us thought about what was actually happening in that moment. And sure, maybe Roger Goodell was on the phone with Donna Ponte and Troy saying, no, don't play. We don't play. It doesn't matter. It doesn't play. We just want to know how he is. But that's not how it was relayed to all of us. And it was over an hour before the public announcement that the game was formally suspended for the rest of the night.
I did see some folks who've worked in the league saying part of the delay in announcing the game is actually canceled was that you want to keep people inside the stadium for keeping the roads clear and stuff like that for first responder stuff like that. I don't know if that...
I just saw
some people say that actually happened before at these sort of events.
And I think there probably was a lot of these just like logistical things that like we don't think about in the moment.
Just kind of minor stuff.
But
yeah.
We are communications professionals, right?
Yes.
And the way that it was communicated publicly, you know, inside that stadium and then beyond.
Yes.
There's probably things that they can review.
You mentioned just look on their faces and how they couldn't possibly continue. I was just reading Andrew Beaton's story in the Wall Street Journal about how the NFL even proceeds with this. And he mentioned in it, I'd forgotten about this, when Christian Erickson, I remembered obviously Christian Erickson collapsing at Euro 2021, but what I forgot was that afterwards when they played the game, they restarted 90 minutes later, the Danish manager said, we were emotionally finished, which I think is probably the correct phrase. And so I don't know how the league proceeds here. There's a lot I want to get into with that, Brian, but just from a league standpoint, like what should they do? What can they do? I mean, my feeling is leave this game in the past, declare it a no contest, and we'll probably have some news here later today, mark it a tie, whatever. I don't know how you there's guys on both sides of the field who are reconsidering their relationship with football right now, or are as scared as they've ever been to be on a football field. And to tell them to channel that into a game 36 hours from now is pretty cruel. I don't know, like there's competitive aspects to it because obviously it's a playoff race, but on the other hand, who gives a shit? If the worst thing that happens here is that the Bills don't get the one seed competitively, they can deal with that. The NFL can deal with that. Everybody can deal with that. Where does the NFL go from here, Brian?
I think it's a great question. And, there was a lot of talk on Twitter and elsewhere last night about wondering about the mental health aspects for players who were on that field and whose faces we obviously saw.
T. Higgins, who just made a normal play and, obviously is now intertwined with one of the most brutal plays in history.
Absolutely. But to me, there's an interesting question because we say, okay, let's cancel this game. Let's not play Bills Bengals at all, which I certainly am in favor of. But then we're talking about another Bills game in 6 days against the Patriots. So why is one mile marker a total no-go and the other one we definitely know will be just fine? I mean, I don't quite understand that. I think it's very, very difficult. And to go back to Lindsay's point about the questions about what the NFL was thinking in the moments after DeMar Hamlin was taken off the field, the NFL has patted itself on the back over and over again about its ability to play football games, right? It played it during COVID. It plays it during hurricanes. It plays it during snowstorms. It just moves the stadium somewhere else. This is the NFL's own words and self-congratulations about this. So when we're all processing not only their decisions last night, but the thinking that is going to be for this next coming weekend, absolutely, that is in the mind because that is the message the NFL itself has given us for years.
I completely agree. And this is something Lindsay and I talked about last night. The fact that this was what ground football to a halt is what's significant about it. That this, because every on that exact field, Tua looked helpless and scared. Yeah. And 5 minutes later, Mike McDaniel's throwing in a backup. Just next man up. That's the whole mentality of the league. The fact that this felt different. This felt significant, and it was different and obviously significant. And so I think you just kind of can continue on that road. This is unprecedented, and unprecedented actions are probably necessary in that regard. The league has not canceled a game since the 1987 strike. They've delayed games, obviously, as you alluded to. They've just moved them because of hurricanes or snowstorms, or in COVID they played it in midweek and let the competitive chips fall where they may. Never abandon a game like this. And this late in the season, I saw a couple people, David Cantor and agents, saying, can they just push back the season 2 or 3 weeks? I don't think they can. I think it's more of a situation of I do think a Bills game will be played in 6 days. And I think that the best they could do is just leave this particular game in the past. But Lindsay, I don't think that they can make wholesale changes to the league calendar because of this.
No, how many thousands of words and hours did we spend talking about all of the COVID contingencies and the week 18 scenarios, and could they push it? There is none of that built into the calendar right now.
Maybe play a Monday type game. Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I think, and that's what the football operations people are privately dealing with and trying to figure out right now, while also trying to come across as compassionate, empathetic individuals, which is not something that the NFL is generally known for doing. So it's going to be very interesting to watch how this plays out. I mean, this is what we always say, right? We're living in unprecedented times. I mean, this is very much an unprecedented situation and still a developing one, because we still don't know. I mean, the Bills went home, or most of the Bills went home. There was reporting from Buffalo reporters that some of the players chose to stay behind, that they were not going to go home and leave their teammate behind in that hospital. So there's still just so much that we don't know. But you're right, Brian. I mean, they play through anything, and they're going to have to figure out a way to both continue on with the business of football, the billion-dollar business of football, while also being very cognizant that it's going to be a very difficult, challenging situation for the Bills, for the Bengals, for literally everybody who was in the refereeing crew, the media, everybody who was on that sideline, the media who is covering that game. I mean, I've been thinking about my friends who are on the Buffalo beat. I mean, this is just all very traumatic stuff really everybody involved.
And what was, I think, most terrifying, I mean, of just of the football part of it, is how normal the play was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. If it, well, I feel like we'd be processing this differently, guys, if it was just like a bone-crushing hit in the middle of the field. The things we've seen that have seriously injured people before, this was just a normal tackle. He gets hit in the chest and he collapses. This is like, and that's what I think is the most bone-chilling part for, you know, the players who are packed tightly around him watching this, is that it literally could have been any of them. Because I think that a lot of times, and I read this a lot, you know, I was just actually just reading this a couple of weeks ago about something else, but you know, people like to say, you know, okay, well, that, you know, that couldn't happen to me, whatever. Like, no, in this particular play, it could have been anyone. And that's what's so terrifying. It was a normal tackle, maybe a normal player. And so anyway, Brian, let's talk about the media aspect of it here. I thought ESPN did a really nice job shepherding the information that could have gone south very quickly when you're just filling airtime for a situation that nobody is equipped for. I did not envy Scott Van Pelt or Ryan Clark. And Ryan Clark, wow, some of his insights yesterday were just spectacular. And he said a couple of things that I think about a lot, and did it far more eloquently than I do. But he was talking about, you know, I guess at his first practice at LSU, a player got hurt and Jerry DiNardo just said, move the ball, which is something, you know, Lindsay, we've talked about this, but that's the most jarring thing for me, where life moves on so quickly in the NFL. And you just say, okay, this guy tore his ACL. His dream is over. He's been working in his backyard every day since he was 12 years old. Too bad. It's August 3rd. You're done, buddy. You're going on IR and you're never coming back. The way the NFL treats football, treats injuries, has always been a little bit cruel. The way they treat injured players is usually a little bit cruel. You kind of get ostracized, kind of a, oh, you're not in the position meeting rooms, you don't matter kind of thing. I thought the level of humanity, the level of insight, the just putting it all together. And this wasn't Ryan Clark. And a lot of times you turn on CNN during breaking news and they're just filling time. Ryan Clark was not filling time. Mm-hmm. Ryan Clark was teaching me about the situation.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it, because it was one of those cases where, again, I think this story was so different than a lot of breaking news stories because there just wasn't any information. And again, what was so striking is that we had about as much information when the ambulance left the stadium last night as we did when we woke up this morning, right? So there was about 2 hours of television there where there weren't any updates coming, essentially, that would clarify the situation or kind of help you understand what Hamlin was going through. So I agree on Ryan Clark. I did want to get you guys to weigh in on this a little bit. ESPN did something during the game that all the networks do when there are injuries, which is they immediately go to a commercial when there's a player on the field. In this case, because he was being attended to for a long period of time, they went to 3 or 4 commercials during that time when he was on the field. I go back and forth on this one a lot. I've criticized it in the past because it seems to me weird to have a Miller Lite commercial come on when somebody's lying on the field like that. And I also think there's a journalistic aspect that you need to cover the story that is in front of you and not just pack in ads. The networks will come back and say, no, everybody needs to take a breath. It's a good chance for all of us to just stop for a second, think about what we're going to say. How do you guys feel about that practice?
Lindsay?
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes it's just really jarring because it's I don't know how much control they have over what ads are being shown. And I know they were going into a lot of kind of like, the typical beer commercial type stuff. And then there were also just a lot of like football action.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kind of commercials, the ones that typically air during football games. And those were kind of jarring. So, I mean, I think it kind of was understandable. And then they got to the point where they just said, like, we can't just have Joe and Troy just narrating this, and they kicked it back to Bristol where Susie Colbert, they were there. But I do, the one moment that did stick out was, I wish I had a timer on it. I'm going to go back maybe and watch it later. But there was just, it felt like minutes of just silence. There was no, Joe Buck wasn't talking. Troy wasn't talking. The stadium was silent. It was almost like they'd cut audio out completely, but they didn't. It was just you could feel exactly what that stadium was like. And then at one point, I don't remember if it was Joe or Troy, jumped in and just said, like, there's nothing to say. Like, there's nothing to say right now. So, but Kevin, I'm with you that I think this was a really strong moment for ESPN. And I think our bar is really low sometimes for how broadcast, you know, networks will handle situations like this. But almost without fail, I think they, you know, Joe Buck was the right person there. Scott Van Pelt was incredible, the way that he shepherded that next hour. Lisa Salters was great. The report that NFL Nation reporters, you know, Ben Baby and Elena Getzenberg, and then Coley Harvey, the work that he was doing outside the hospital. I mean, this was like a journalism moment. And so often we look at ESPN as like, you know, entertainment television, but their journalists really shone or just did a really great job in that situation.
I do want, there's a kind of a non-update from the Bills 1 minute ago. Damar Hamlin spent last night in the intensive care unit, according to the Bills. He remains there in critical condition today. So getting kind of crumbs of information. That's all we know right now. Brian, you mentioned the commercial thing. Having gone through this as a viewer in soccer. So with Ericsson, they did it a little differently. They actually threw it to the studio a couple times, and it was kind of mixed there, the success they had with Ericsson.
So the other news that the NFL, this is just coming out now within 0 minutes ago. After speaking with both teams and NFLPA leadership, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell informed both clubs today the Bills-Bengals game will not be resumed this week. The NFL has made no decision regarding the possible resumption of the game at a later date. They have not made any changes to the Week 18 regular schedule at this point. So
that's about what we expected, frankly.
Yeah.
It's about what we expected. It's the right move, Brian. And I think the most obvious course of action is they play these games and then they just either, I don't know, award a tie, award a no contest, take it off the record, do percentage points. This game will never be played.
Yeah. But sounds like at least right now they might be planning to play Saturday and Sunday. Yes.
Yeah,
as scheduled. So, I mean, at least that's right. Like somewhat expectation setting now for all of those players. And you can try to begin the process of getting ready for that. I don't know how you do it, as we've already talked about, but at least they're kind of moving the plans forward.
So going back, Brian, to the question about the commercials, the silence can tell a very good story sometimes. And Lindsay pointed that out. And I think that just going back to sort of what I've seen from other sports, I don't think it would have been the worst thing in the world. Just kind of wide shots, crowd shots, stadium shots, stay with it, because it was a moment that we were all invested in. Right. And I don't want to feel disconnected from that. Like, we're all rooting for Damar, we're rooting for something to happen. And there's a lot of daylight between showing what was actually happening, which was probably something nobody wanted to see, and showing a light beer commercial. And so I would have stuck with it. Let the silence tell the story. Joe and Troy don't have to talk. If you want to check in, Joe, every couple of minutes. And I also, like, there's an element here of you can trust Joe Buck, you can trust Troy Aikman, because they know what they're doing. They're elite broadcasters. They're not going to, you know, just start freelancing and talk about, you know, that T. Higgins has been looking good up to this point. Like, that's not going to happen. You can trust those guys to meet the moment. Almost everybody on the broadcast met the moment last night. Everybody, I'll take out the almost. Everybody met the moment last night. SCP, Ryan Clark, Joe Buck, Troy Aikman. And, you know,
Lisa Salters, I throw into that list too, by the way.
Yes, I'm sorry, Lisa Salters. Yeah. And what's interesting about it is I thought SCP was dead on. I don't know if you guys saw Joe Buck afterwards, but he said, nobody cares what I think. And SCP said, I disagree. Like, everybody cares what you think. And there's kind of a trustworthiness to Buck that I think is made him the perfect person for that. And so I actually disagree with the commercial throwing. I just feel like, and first of all, are the advertisers all that jazzed? They're the people who get thrown to in this situation. Like, I don't know about that one. So I would have stuck with it. Let the wide shots, let the story unfold, because it was a story we were all invested in.
We talked about this on Pressbox a little bit today, but going back to Joe Theismann's gruesome injury way back when, there has been this kind of question within broadcasting, which is, how much do we cover the story in front of us? Because as you said, Lindsay, it is a journalism moment. They are at least journalists much of the time, and many of the people who work for ESPN are full-time journalists. How much do we cover the moment in front of us? And how much do we worry about exploiting somebody else's pain for content, which is why we see only one or two replays and then we never see it again. We certainly don't see any of the medical personnel working on Damar Hamlin on the field, right? And you can feel that pull both ways during the broadcast. You could certainly feel it last night because they ideally want to do both, right? They want to cover the story, but they don't want to exploit what is happening in front of them. And so what you do is you have to find, as you say, Kevin, that right tone. You have to find the right things to show on the air. You know, again, you're sitting in the truck. I think that's part of the reason they went to the studio with Susie Colbert, is because what do we put on the air at this point? Is it a wide shot of the stadium? Is it more shots of the players crying, which some people on Twitter thought was okay. And we've seen that. Now let's not dwell on that either. It's very, very, very tricky. And there's no right answer to the question. There's no book that's going to tell you what to do in the moment. You just sort of have to feel your way through.
Unless it borders on sort of exploitation or just hovering around one player, I don't think that showing the players crying and reacting was too far at all. Like, I thought that helped tell the story of a very serious situation and mm-hmm. how much these guys are together. And, you know, Lindsay, we talked about this, but just seeing, I knew it was different when you saw Sean McDermott kind of praying his breath almost immediately. And not in a, this might be an ACL kind of thing, but like in a very concerned outward, like I'm praying on the sideline here immediately thing. And so I don't think, I mean, you have to show what's happening. This is a news event, right? And like I saw.
You show what's happening to a point, I would say. Again, yes. You say that.
Of course.
But there's also a lot of, let's look away. You know, it's an interesting balance.
I think showing anything that was happening with DeMar would be way too much. And so I don't know if you guys saw, so Chris Pronger had a very similar situation. He actually got better quite quickly, but he tweeted out his thing. He got hit with a slap shot, collapsed, and in the heart, collapsed, and eyes rolled back in his head, all that stuff. But the problem is, I guess we didn't know enough or whatever. The first thing the broadcast did in this Blues Wings game in 1997 was immediate close up on his face with his eyes rolling back in his head. And it's like, okay, we're good here. We don't need that. And they kind of stuck with it. I mean, there wasn't a lot of awareness of that. And there wasn't Twitter back then to police this sort of thing. But I do think that's the bridge too far for me. It's just like, oh, we're covering this and we're going to show exactly what's happening. And you saw that in subsequent hockey things. Most people have collapsed. So there have been three or four instances where people have collapsed on the bench. And typically they don't really, either they show a wide angle or kind of don't show it at all, or they wait until they're safely out of there. Like, I do think there's a fine line, and I do think ESPN was on the right side of it yesterday.
Yeah, and we kind of mentioned this before, that this is also just a different, you know, this was a cardiac arrest, and this was life-saving measures that were going on the field. And, you know, I did think back a lot last night to when Tua had his concussion on that mm-hmm. same field in Cincinnati. It was also a national, you know, it was a primetime game. It was the Amazon broadcast, not ESPN, but it was the Thursday night football game. And something that Roger Sherman and I had talked a lot about, and he wrote about that night. He's been, you know, reporting on and, you know, talking about since, is that so often, and you wrote about this last night too, Kevin, in your column, that so often when we talk about the dangers of football and the brutality and the violence and the impact that this game has on the men who play it, it's stuff that happens in private, right? We don't see, you know, we will hear, you know, eventually when players have retired, we'll hear about the toll that it's taken on their bodies. Or after a player, you know, unfortunately passes away, we hear about CTE and the toll that it took on his brain. It's these situations that are, when they are broadcast, that show us, and you can't ignore the dangers of this sport. And, you know, it was when Tua had his concussion, the second one back in, I guess that was October. And, you know, they focused really tightly on his hands, right? It was like that fencing posture, and they kept showing it over and over. It was like this debate going back and forth of like, when do you stop showing it? But then also we kind of need to see it to see when we talk about, this is what a traumatic brain injury looks like. This is what is actually happening to this player. And, you know, what was different about last night was that, you know, this player's heart stopped, and it was so random, so instantaneous. But I think, yeah, I think they, you know, you could also see the Bills players had like the awareness to like create kind of like a shield around. Did you see the way they were like kind of blocking and protecting? A lot of them stood with their backs to him, probably because they couldn't watch it themselves, but also it was just this very like protective nature of like, we're going to let this, what needs to happen here, happen. But it's very interesting. And I'm very interested in listening more, Brian, on the future episodes of the Press Box as you kind of dissect, because we're still like in this moment right now of how this was covered and how this was talked about. But I think there's going to be a lot to learn for future broadcasters, current broadcasters, about the way that everything was handled last night.
All right, guys. Thanks for coming on. Hopefully we'll have more updates, more positive updates going forward. We will see you then. Thank you to Ron McNair for his production help. Talk to you guys soon.